Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, January 15, the day that we honor the life of Dr. Martin Luther King. We are going to have a special hour, the second hour of our program, with two women who are at the forefront of the civil rights movement here in Milwaukee and also in Florida. And we'll be hearing part of Dr. Martin Luther King's If I Had Sneezed address. We also have a special program at noon today. Tribute to the civil rights leader. Wisconsin Public Radio's Jonathan Overby will host this live broadcast featuring guest speakers, musicians, and honorees from the State Capitol Rotunda. That will be at 12 noon today here on the Ideas Network. The first hour of our program we devote once again to Iraq, the president and the vice president making television appearances over the weekend. The president on 60 Minutes of all places, not a place you would expect him to show up over the weekend, said that he has the authority to act no matter what Congress wants. I fully understand they could try to stop me from doing it, but I've made my decision and we're going forward, he said. Vice President Dick Cheney said that the president is the commander-in-chief. He's the one who has to make these tough decisions, and any attempts to block the president's efforts would undermine the troops. This hour of the program, we're going to be speaking with Professor Bruce Ackerman. He is at Yale University, where he is professor of law and political science, the author of 15 books that have had a broad influence in political philosophy, constitutional law, and public policy. Some of those books include Before the Next Attack, Preserving Civil Liberties in an Age of Terrorism, also Social Justice in the Liberal State, and his multi-volume constitutional history, We the People. He's also the author of The Failure of the Founding Fathers and The Stakeholder Society, rather, and a number of other books. He wrote an interesting piece in the Los Angeles Times recently, just on January 10th, saying there are a lot of bad ways for Congress to respond to the president's escalation in Iraq, but there is one good way, and he'll tell us what that good way is in just a moment. We will be welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. You can respond to what the professor will say is a great strategy. You can respond to what the president had to say on 60 Minutes or the vice president on Fox. Take this whatever direction you want. Professor Bruce Ackerman, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Pleasure.
Yeah, real nice to have you here. So there is one good way, you say, for Congress to respond to the escalation, and it is?
Well, to set an absolute cap on the amount of money we're going to spend in this military adventure. At the present time, and I'm using very conservative numbers here, Kathleen. I don't want to get into big debates. So I'm just looking at the amount of money we have spent directly on the war in Iraq. That adds up to $350 billion. And what I propose is that when the president asks for a new emergency appropriation, which he's going to do in the next 4 weeks because we're running out of money again, Congress sets an absolute ceiling of $500 billion and not a penny more. Normally, you see, whenever Congress is going to try to control the president here, he'll just, and they pass a statute, he'll just veto it.
Mm-hmm.
But he cannot veto the appropriations bill. And so if you put a rider on the appropriations bill and say, yes, we will give you the next chunk of money, but with the condition that $500 billion is as far as we're going to go, he will sign it.
Mm-hmm.
And that will set a point at which he and his military planners know he has to get out of Iraq. He has to do as good a job as he can with his $150 billion, and that's it.
And that's it. What have we spent all that money on, $350 billion?
Yes, it is
a lot of money, yeah.
It is a lot. We're spending, of course, we're going to be spending more each month with this escalation. But so I would guess that we'll be spending between $5 and $6 billion a month, maybe a little more.
Mm-hmm.
So that means if we have already, by let's say March, spent $350 billion, that's $60 billion every 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll. That means the president will have to come back again and try to convince the country to increase the cap from a more. We need more than a half a trillion dollars. You'll have to say. Sometime in 2008.
Mm-hmm. What about the idea, and it's been debated whether or not they can do this, of voting on the surge spending itself, so saying no to that amount of money, to the additional appropriations. Would there be problems with doing that?
Well, as a constitutional lawyer, I would say that there are no constitutional problems with doing that. I think it's very unwise. I don't think that Congress should try to micromanage military strategy. I think that this is a job for these tactical decisions is the job of the president and his generals. And we could turn this into a political football, especially with so many of the members of Congress running for the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's unwise.
Mm-hmm.
Moreover, in this particular case, it would be futile because the president is correct. He does have the constitutional authority to use the money that he has, the last emergency appropriation, to spend... in Iraq, and he can send more troops in. So by the time this next emergency appropriation comes in, we will be escalating already.
Yeah.
It's also very important, I think, to distinguish two issues in the minds of the American people. One is this a limited war or not? The other one is, are we going to undermine the troops in the field?
Mm-hmm.
This kind of micromanaging will inevitably generate charges, some false and maybe some true, that we are making life more difficult for the troops in the field. And that's a mistake to get that issue. Nobody wants to undermine the troops in the field. Get confused with the fundamental question, which is the question for Congress to decide,
mm-hmm.
which is this war never ending? The war on terror is never ending,
mm-hmm.
Because it isn't a war, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But here, if we confuse this is a war which has been fought on false premises, and so, of course, we're not going to reach the success. And if we don't say, well, look, we try to do as good a job as we can. We made a mistake here. Try to do as good a job as we can. It would be irresponsible simply to pull out tomorrow. The President of the United States and the generals have to plan to... We give you a chunk of money. You try to do the best job you can, but you have to be out of there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of big decision that the American people thought they were making in the last election, and right. Congress is charged with executing.
Yeah. Professor Ackerman, it's hard to get inside the mind of the president, but I have to ask you this nonetheless because I've been thinking about it a lot and so have others. Why is it, do you think, that the president has decided to go this route? When we had the Iraq study group, we have completely different advice from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, from many of his military commanders. Obviously, the American public is very much against this at this point. Why is he committing more troops there? What's going on with his strategy?
Yes. You know, the same thing happened in the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
We are basically at the point of 1968 in the Vietnam War, where the American people very plainly, voted against Lyndon Johnson's escalation. Richard Nixon had a secret plan for peace. And yet it took us 7 more years before we got out. The bureaucratic dynamic is overwhelming, and it takes a very, very strong person to say, "Look, I have made a mistake, and it is time for us to cut our losses."
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it is so terribly important for Congress, which did not do a good job last time in Vietnam. You see, Congress did not creatively use its spending power and permitted appropriation upon appropriation to be granted every time because, of course, you didn't want to undermine the troops in the field.
Mm-hmm. Have you mentioned this idea to Senator Kennedy or others?
Well, I think I've gotten quite a positive response, really. You see, Senator Kennedy's bill, as I suggest, which contemplates, as you were suggesting, I think that Senator Feingold is also coming up with a similar bill, trying to discriminate between the money for the 130,000 we have now and the 150,000 that we will have, that kind of thing. It's going to, you know, even if it were passed, which it will not be, would be vetoed.
Mm-hmm.
There is only one opportunity, which is this special appropriations bill that the president will just have to sign.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it will become clear. You know, of course, people are sort of shocked, frankly.
They're shocked by the president's actions?
Yes. I mean, this is really, it's hard to recall. I have, as you mentioned, spent too much of my life on the constitutional history of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard to recall a president sort of so vigorously sawing himself off the limb. And making no effort at all to find a middle ground with his critics who have now suddenly power to control him.
Right. It's also hard for me to imagine, maybe you have a better understanding of what these soldiers are going to do in Baghdad, but it seems to me as though they're just walking into what will be a bloodbath. I can't understand what their mission will be there, who they're supposed to kill, how you find out who the insurgents are. Is it okay for them to kill Shiites, even though Shiite militias are empowering Maliki? It's just, it's a mess.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is, the American military is already encountering predictable difficulties trying to get a system of cooperation with the Iraqi government. One of the most important facts of the Iraq study group, which hasn't been emphasized enough, is its finding that the number of Americans in the American embassy who are fluent speakers of Arabic, is 6.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, just think of what that implies so far as ordinary military guys concerned. What is this coordination?
Mm-hmm.
You know? How is this supposed to work?
I don't know.
And worse yet, if the Americans the American government's policy, and it is said that the Maliki government is committed to it, but does attack the Sadr militia, that is the Shiite militia of 60,000 in their very large areas in Baghdad, the great fear is that they will be tipped off.
Right. Let's welcome phone calls. Our guest is Professor Bruce Ackerman, Sterling Professor of Law and Political Science at Yale, author of a number of books, and we're talking about his idea, and beyond this as well, that a good way for Congress to respond to President Bush's escalation in Iraq is set a price tag on the long-run cost of the war. $500 billion and tell the president that he won't be getting a penny more. He says that we will have spent about $350 billion on the war by spring, and setting a long-term ceiling is the only step that will force the president to recognize that the American people are no longer willing to give him a blank check for what he calls an endless series of mistakes. 800, our phone lines are all busy, but there will be openings. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, we will honor the 78th birthday. Doesn't that seem young now? Martin Luther King would have been 78 years old today. We'll honor his memory. We'll hear a portion of one of his speeches, and we'll talk with two women at the forefront of the civil rights movement in Wisconsin and also in Florida. So I hope you'll join in. Professor Bruce Ackerman is with us now. He is a professor of law, political science at Yale University. Latest book is Before the Next Attack, Preserving Civil Liberties in the Age of Terrorism. Our first caller is Frank from Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you very much for your guest.
Thank you.
And I have a proposition for your guest, which is that he's being very polite. His suggestion is proceeding by indirection. That Congress and the Senate have to confront a president who thinks not only that he's commander-in-chief, but which is his power over the military, but that he alone determines war or peace, and who's asserting power, unrestrained power. He doesn't recognize the existence of the law. He's the law. So perhaps the guest is trying to avoid a constitutional crisis. But, you know, to my mind, Congress has to assert its prerogatives and precipitate a crisis. Or does the professor prefer to avoid that? And thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for the call.
Sure, Frank. Well, I you're absolutely right, Frank. I don't enjoy crises. I think that we should do everything reasonable to avoid them. I do think, however, that there is another rider, as it were. The first rider is this setting the overall limit on the amount we spend for the Iraqi war. But I do believe there should be a second rider seriously considered. I'm going to certainly write something about it soon. I think I'll call it the Freedom Rider, perhaps in honor of Martin Luther King. But because, of course, Frank is right in saying that the President of the United States is making much larger claims of his prerogatives as commander-in-chief, and in particular, his claims to throw people in jail on his say-so and keep them indefinitely without due process. And he's made these claims not only in Guantanamo, but in the United States, especially in the case of Jose Padilla, an American citizen who was thrown. He arrives in Chicago and was thrown in jail, saying with Attorney General Ashcroft saying that he was a in a plot to have a dirty nuclear device destroy an American city. All of this stuff has been withdrawn, and for 3.5 years, however, he was kept in a military brig. Worse yet, just before the last election, in the Military Commissions Act of 2006, the Congress, as its last serious act, actually beefed up the president's power to do this. It is now, for the first time since really the middle of the 17th century in England, the law of the land legal residents of the United States who are not citizens, and there are tens of millions of them, I'm not talking about illegal aliens, but just legal residents, can be declared enemy combatants by the president, and they are denied the right to go to court to challenge the foundations of the president's declaration in any way. Now, this is really, I can't emphasize, you were mentioning, Kathleen, that I wrote a book on civil liberties and the war of terror. This is really a one of the most remarkable statutes passed in the history of the United States, destroying not some sort of fancy kind of human liberty, but the most foundational principle, a safeguard against tyranny for tens of millions of people living in the United States. And, of course, sets a precedent for more cases like Padilla.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about Congress's responsibility in this regard, Professor Ackerman? Will they take this issue on? Will
we
get a better...
Well, once again, I think that, you see, if Congress just tried to say the Military Commissions Act of 2006 is repealed, I think you might have the votes for it now.
Hmm.
Certainly the provision that I just stated, which stripped habeas corpus protection, that is the right to go to court if you're mm-hmm. thrown into jail for no good reason, from tens of millions of Americans, that certainly has a majority vote. Arlen Specter last time, although he was responsible for much of the bad features of the bill, tried to strip that provision out, and I think he lost by one vote, 47 to 46. Mm-hmm. And, of course, now there are quite a much larger number of senators who would vote for it. So I think there would be a majority. But, of course, once again, the president will veto the bill. Unless you put it in as a rider to the military appropriations bill. This is entirely germane. You see, both the price tag idea that I have and this freedom idea are basically fundamental acts by Congress to control the president's powers as commander-in-chief without micromanaging.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they both belong there. And the use of appropriations bills in this context has a long and noble history, really, through as far back as the English Civil War and Parliament's efforts to control the king. So there's absolutely no problem with this, and it's a way of responding, I think, constructively to Frank's point, mm-hmm. which is that the president is indeed claiming unprecedented and very terrible powers.
Roger from Madison is next. Hi, Roger.
Hi, good morning, Kathleen, and to your guest. I'm just wondering if your guest isn't missing the additional step that I think that Congress should take on any kind of an appropriations bill here, and that is to roll back as many of the recent tax cuts as possible so that we start paying for this war now. I think it both adds insult to injury to ask any of the soldiers who are lucky enough to come back to take on the entire debt for this war. And I also think that having our national debt get higher and higher is undermining our country. The real danger to our country is to have such a large national debt that we are totally hamstrung and that we can't provide the veterans benefits, that we can't provide the education for these veterans and their children, that we can't provide the kind of social services that they've thought, because we're told we just can't afford it because of the national debt created by this Iraq war.
Professor Ackerman.
Well, I agree, Roger, with your basic diagnosis, but I think there is a danger in tacking too much onto the appropriations bill. There have been many such efforts, you know. Any time Congress sees a bill that the president has to sign, there is this temptation to put on more and more Christmas tree elements. And if we do too much of that, we're going to dilute the key issues, which is to set the basic parameters on the president's commander-in-chief power. So I would not be in favor, frankly, of trying to repeal subsection 47326ABQ of the Internal Revenue Code and that kind of thing. I would be in favor of a war tax, a war surcharge, saying, you know, it is, we hereby raise the income tax rates by X percent to cover this $500 billion. I would be in favor of that. But there is a danger of putting too many things, you know, onto this one bill, and then suddenly we lose sight of the key issue, you know, the most important thing, it seems to me, and it seems to a very large number of people, is to force the president to have a responsible strategy for ending this limited war.
Thanks very much for the call. Are you worried, Professor Ackerman, that we're about to go after Iran?
Well, you know, I can't believe it, frankly.
You can't believe we would?
You know, although, you know, I should say, you know, without any great... I was very much opposed to our going into Iraq and wrote a great deal in leading newspapers about the illegality of it. And I frankly didn't believe we were going to do this. So... But still, it would seem to me that we just don't have the army to do it.
Hmm. So you believe deep in your heart that we're going to do the right thing usually. Do you?
Look, my life has been dedicated to figuring out ways of making things better.
Good for you.
I mean, frankly, the caller before Roger was right. I mean, I don't glory in constitutional crises and disasters. We have a lot of good things to do, and we have to, you know, figure out a responsible way for not letting this go the path of Vietnam, and 7 years from now, we're still there.
Yeah. That's hard to imagine, isn't it? Seven years from now.
It was hard to imagine in 1968,
right.
Too.
Yeah. Tom from Burlington, hi.
Good morning. There's the old saying, be careful who you choose to be your enemies because you'll become just like them. Mm. And it appears we're leaning in the direction, that direction of losing our civil liberties one after the other. But I'd just like to point out, I think one of the things that we might consider is having a tactical retreat. Fall back into our we've got bases over there. I guess we have 14 of them. Get all of our army people, keep them in the bases, and bring in the Iraqi army that we want to train them in the bases, and let them go out. And I think that might be a way of instead of having a complete retreat, a complete pullout, you might do it in a phase like that. Another thing I'd like to point out is, in Japan, when we occupied Japan, and we should go and look back at all the other countries we've occupied and look at the history of the occupation, but one singular thing that point comes out from the occupation of Japan, when we occupied them, there was not one foreign country that was paid to do the reconstruction. All these contracts now for reconstructing Iraq, they're going to American companies. We've never done that before. Before, it used to be the country that we were constructing, that was the country that got the money to do the reconstruction. And I think it's a basic thing that we've forgotten. And one more point is, I think if we're sending people over there, we should teach them the language. They should learn how to speak the Iraqi language, so when they're kicking in these doors,
right.
That they can, you know, at least talk to the people they're kicking in the doors to.
Yeah. Professor Ackerman.
Well, you see, we've tried these things and have failed. I quite agree with you about the Halliburton and use of American companies to take the large burden of reconstruction. But I do think that it is unwise to contemplate a permanent set of military bases in Iraq. We have refused to declare that we will withdraw from Iraq at any time. The president has consistently refused to do this, and I think it was terribly important for us to say clearly that we are leaving Iraq. Perhaps we should have some kind of military commitment to the Kurdish region, perhaps. But if the Iraqis increasingly believe that we intend to occupy them indefinitely, and that generates a tremendous backlash. We are no longer liberators, but occupiers. Public opinion polls, not that I put much faith in public opinion polls in Iraq, suggest that the majority of both the Shia and the Sunnis want us to leave, period.
By huge numbers, right? 90-some percent.
Yeah. A majority of both the Sunnis and Shias believe that it's legitimate to kill Americans. The idea, we have been trying to train General Petraeus, who is now going to be the new commander-in-chief, 18 months ago, was in charge of training the Iraqi troops. We have not done this successfully. You're quite right that if we're contemplating further military interventions in the Arab world in the future, the solution is going to be have 50,000 or 100,000 American troops speaking Arabic. But that's a big if. If you want to, but this is not going to help us, obviously, in the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. It takes a little while for kids who are 22 years old and probably have not even learned French or Spanish to learn Arabic.
We've been at this for 4 years. You can learn a language in 4 years, right?
Yes, but we have not had any great efforts to do so.
Yeah.
And this is, this is part of our basic provincialism problem. We just don't do languages very well.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Tom. We go to Rich next from Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Kathleen, Professor Ackerman, good morning.
Good morning.
And Professor Ackerman, welcome to our modest but maverick state of Wisconsin, home of great ideas, not the least of which is Wisconsin Public Radio.
All right, Rich. Happy New Year.
Are you Kathleen's brother-in-law or something?
No. Oh, God, she wouldn't want me as a brother. But more to the point, among the mavericks of our state is one with whom I did not always agree, Bill Proxmire, but he had something called the Golden Fleece Awards, where he took on government spending. And I am convinced that there has been war profiteering. And Harry S. Truman came to prominence by conducting war profiteering hearings after World War II. That's how he rose to the top. And a top of attention, I mean. And I really do think that you are a very nice man and you are a very moderate man, but I think we have to go after, in hearings, the war profiteering, because Americans will put up with a lot of stuff, but the one thing I and we will not put up with is misspending our money, whether it's by Wisconsin Public Radio, they do not, okay, or the President of the United States and his Vice President. They do misspend our money, and this war in Iraq has made instant millionaires.
Professor Ackerman.
Well, of course, I agree with this, that we should have, and we will have, oversight hearings on this. I'm sure of it. But I should say that the more serious problem, I mean, this is a problem, and there will be hearings on this. But the more serious problem is the corruption of the Iraqi government. So, for example, to Tom's question in this connection, there are an enormous number of the so-called ghost troops. We've trained 300. It said we are told to 300, almost 300,000 Iraqi troops. Most of them don't. Many of them, large percentage of them, don't exist. The reason why their names are on the books is very straightforward. There's no functioning banking system in Iraq. Iraqis soldiers get paid by their commanding officers. Large truckloads of cash come into the commanding officer, and he pockets the money.
Mm.
This is sort of like old-style Tammany Hall, you know?
Right, yeah.
Basically, you know, we characteristically have the problem that when an Iraqi brigade actually does show up, it's at half strength. The other people are, you know, somewhere else because they don't exist. So this is why the training effort, you know, it seems a very long-term process, and I don't believe in a long-term engagement in Iraq. I think we have to have a responsible way for making this mistake come to an end.
Professor Bruce Ackerman, our guest, professor of law, political science at Yale, author of Before the Next Attack, Preserving Civil Liberties in an Age of Terrorism. He's also author of the multi-volume constitutional history, We the People. He's the author of The Failure of the Founding Fathers and a number of other books, and suggests that what we need to do, or what Congress needs to do, is set a price tag on the long-run cost of this war, say $500 billion, and tell the president that he would not be getting a penny more. He could not veto such legislation. What do you think of that idea, and what do you think of all that's been said by the president and the vice president and the Democrats and just us, just the people, about the escalation of this war? 800—we have a couple lines open, so join us. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. Should you be in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Following the news from National Public Radio, we will pay tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King. Today is his 78th birthday. We will hear some of his words. We will also hear from Vel Phillips, Wisconsin civil rights pioneer, and Patricia Stevens Due, co-author of Freedom in the Family, a mother-daughter memoir of the fight for civil rights. And a reminder that on this Martin Luther King Day, we invite you to stay with us at noon for the state's tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King. Wisconsin Public Radio's Jonathan Overby will host this live broadcast featuring guest speakers, musicians, and honorees from the state capitol rotunda. That's at 12 noon today here on the Ideas Network. Back to phone calls for Professor Bruce Ackerman, professor of law and political science at Yale, author of the Before the Next Attack, Preserving Civil Liberties in an Age of Terrorism. And we go to Mike next from Appleton. Hello, Mike.
Oh, yeah, good morning. I would ask the professor two questions. The first question is, Professor, don't you see a fundamental difference, and you brought up Vietnam in a couple of opportunities, don't you see a fundamental difference between Vietnam and what's going on in the region of Iraq? I mean, the North Vietnamese were certainly not going to come after us, but the, you know, these radical Islamists are. That was my first question. The second question, you say put a cap, in other words, put a limit. Don't you think it's unwise to let your enemy know, I'm going to fight up to this point, because he'll simply wait you out? Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mike.
There is a fundamental difference between Vietnam and Iraq. I don't know, of course, you know, in the old days, it wasn't so clear that the Vietnam one was the less dangerous of the two. After all, in the Vietnam context, we had a nuclear power, the Soviet Union, and what they were trying to do, or so we believed, and I think accurately, was to dominate the world and actually take us over. In Iraq, we have a very serious problem, and I think we've made it a lot more serious by our intervention. We have strengthened immensely Iran, and by constantly threatening the regime, have encouraged them to create nuclear weapons. In after all, the Iranians compare the fate of Iraq, which had no nuclear weapons, and the fate of North Korea, which did, and ask themselves, why did the Americans invade Iraq and not North Korea? So I do very much agree that we have a very serious problem. It's, you know, very hard from a historical perspective to say that it's more serious than our struggle against the Soviet Union and this proxy war in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
When we make a blunder, we have to confront the fact that invading Iraq was a serious mistake. When we make a mistake, there are consequences.
Mm.
There's no doubt that our situation is going to be worse one way or the other. We're just trying to manage the bad scenarios. That's all that we see before us for a while. But I do think that the notion of radical Islamists has to be refined. What will happen if we leave Iraq is obviously difficult to guess. But the most likely consequence in most of Iraq is that we will have someone like Muqtada al-Sadr.
Mm-hmm.
We will have substituted a secular despot
for a religious one.
A religious despot.
Mm-hmm.
However, the Shiites are not do not look kindly upon Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is a Sunni organization. So we have to be a bit discriminating here. Will the Iranians and the Shiites in most of Iraq want to have terrorists to attack America? I don't know about that. Why would we think so? They'll want to expand their power in the Middle East, and we'll be weakened as a result. That's for sure. We have to be more discriminating in our understanding of the Islamic world. I think that certainly Muqtada al-Sadr will try to eliminate al-Qaeda in Iraq, not expand it. Whether they will, I see very little reason, frankly, to think that the Iranians will engage in provocative activity of the kind that was guaranteed to generate a tremendous armed reaction against them by the United States, which is to sponsor terrorist acts against America.
Doug from Wauwatosa, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Another great show, Kathleen.
Thanks, Doug.
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to quickly address the previous caller in terms of, you know, they're coming after us if we lose this campaign. Look, we had a successful campaign in Kuwait in 91, and that did not stop 9/11. What really gets fundamentalist Islam upset is when we intervene, like the U.S. coal and the Persian Gulf, like Somalia intervention. So the fact that we are intervening is actually causing more of this activity to possibly occur in our country. But my question isn't Article 1 of the Constitution very specific in terms of what types of wars we can fight? I believe Section 8 indicates, I don't have the copy of the Constitution in front of me, but I think it's insurrection, secession, and invasion. And none of those things happened in this instance. Isn't this entire war unconstitutional?
I think, Doug, you're confusing two provisions. One of them, but the one that you're pointing, the power to declare war is not limited. You are referring to the power to suspend habeas corpus, which is indeed restricted to cases of rebellion and invasion. And this is why this Military Commissions Act, which permanently suspends habeas corpus for tens of millions of legal residents of the United States, and also supports in lots of ways, the statute does, suspending habeas corpus for American citizens is unconstitutional because there is at present no invasion of the United States or rebellion. Perhaps you would say that 9/11 was an invasion for a moment, but there is a lot of case law that establishes that, you know, like in the aftermath of Pearl Harbor, it was declared by the court unconstitutional to suspend habeas corpus for more than a few months. So you're quite right that this Military Commissions Act represents something that is unconstitutional. Will the Supreme Court of the United States, increasingly conservative, decide that? Well, I'm not a I'm not a Kremlinologist, and I'm not a Supreme Court guesser and watcher. But it should. Much better for Congress to have this rider on the appropriations bill. But the power to declare war is not limited in this way, and Congress did authorize this war. I opposed it at the time, but it did authorize this war. So it is illegal under the United Nations Charter, but it is has been authorized by the Congress of the United States. So I cannot say that this war is unconstitutional.
What do you make, Professor Ackerman, of Vice President Cheney's comments on Fox yesterday? They, referring to the Democrats, have absolutely nothing to offer in the place of the president's plan. I have yet to hear a coherent policy from the Democratic side.
You know, I don't quite get this. That is to say, the Iraq Study Group is this bipartisan effort. The Democrats up and down have declared their support for the Iraq Study Group's proposal. I just don't, I don't think he's listening.
Okay. Doug, thanks for the call. Craig from Onalaska is next. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. I'd like to say that I agree with the professor's idea of putting a limit on spending. What I'd also like to see is much more of a national debate on how we fight our wars and go to wars. And I'll preface that by saying that I think since World War II, we go to war with no real concept of winning that war. We hope that we will, but we don't really have an idea of how to do it. And I'd like to see, you know, where we have a national debate and have people explain how we go to war, what we're going to do in a war, and how we're going to win the war. And we have the idea that we can bomb one house, leave the house next to it standing, and win a war. And my idea of going to war is you either go to war and win or you don't go to war at all.
Well, I agree that there is this illusion of a high-tech triumph, shock and awe being the high point. But I must say that I think that the next great debate is how to recreate international institutions. We have suffered a tremendous loss of moral and political leadership in the world, especially in Europe. There is a big difference, actually, between Europe and China, where I was recently. They're very pro-American, and also in India. But in Europe, there is a tremendous loss. If we look 25, 50 years ahead, it should be clear that our aim, right, we are at the height of our power right now, and our aim should be to create an international order dedicated to freedom and equality and democracy that will accommodate the rising powers in the world like China and India, and try to create subtle and not so subtle incentives to deepen their commitments to these fundamental values. I frankly, although Kathleen, as I've been wrong before, I cannot believe that we're going to fight another high-tech mirage war for the next 5 or 10 or 15 years. The crucial thing is whether we're going to sort of engage in a false militarism, that is, a lot of war talk, a lot of throwing around our big stick, rather than returning to the basic path. It's we who created the United Nations. It's we who created the United Nations. It's we who created NATO. It's we who created and encouraged, well, it's we who encouraged the creation of the European Union. These are the great triumphs that we should build upon. So that should be our national conversation, as far as I'm concerned, to repudiate this 6 years of error.
Professor Bruce Ackerman, thank you so much. I appreciate your breadth of knowledge, and you are perfectly charming. Thank you very much for being with us. Thanks. Professor Bruce Ackerman, he is Sterling Professor of Law and Political Science at Yale University. He's the author of a number of books, including most recently Before the Next Attack, Preserving Civil Liberties in an Age of Terrorism. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. We will be, of course, analyzing the way forward in Iraq for the foreseeable future. So we won't let you down on lots of analysis. I'm Kathleen Dunn. News is coming up, and then we will return on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.